Welcome to Gay Ambition Podcast, where we bring out the best in life, community, and the workplace. I'm your host, Paul Collington. Today, I have an exceptional guest who's a trailblazer in her own right. Eden Lane is the first mainstream transgender television broadcast journalist and is the creator, host, and producer of In Focus with Eden Lane, a Colorado public television weekly program celebrating arts and culture. Let's dive into the interview. So I have to say, this is my third sit-down interview now. I did Brad Clark and then Chris Parente, and now you, Miss Eden Lane.
I heard both of those. They were very good.
Really? Thank
yes.
you.
Yes.
And I have to say, there's something about being in person that just brings a certain amount of chemistry and energy to the room. I know that I've had to do a lot of interviews via Skype, which is awesome because people are around the country, but this is awesome to be here with you.
That's something. Oh, thank you for saying that. I'm glad to be here with you. Skype and all of those wonderful pieces of technology that allow us to interview not in the flesh are great, but you're right. There's absolutely nothing like being in the same moment together, sharing the same space together. To have the interview. It makes it much more conversational. I'm so glad you invited me today.
Yes, and this is a great space. We're in a co-working space called Shift. It's in the downtown Denver area, and
it's
pretty fabulous.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I was just talking with her, and she said they opened in September of last year.
There's so many of these popping up all over the place, and they all have their own unique identity, and I really love them. I really want to participate in one, too.
Yeah. So I have to start with the power party, because that's where I met you officially a couple weeks ago. And I have to say, it was a fabulous event.
Didn't they do a great job of selecting people to honor, and the decor, and just assembling members of the community to come together and celebrate one another? It really was
yes.
wonderful.
Yeah, and the food was great, too. I know that
one of the vegetarian options, so that's not always as great.
Yeah. That's true.
But the dessert was phenomenal.
That's true. What was your favorite part about hosting the event?
Oh, you know, my favorite part about hosting it was just the fact that before the evening begins, I have an excuse to walk around the entire room and say hello to people and ask what group they're from and what, you know, who they're there to honor or do they know some of the honorees. That part of it, playing, quote, hostess, that was my most enjoyable aspect of the evening because otherwise, I probably would have been too shy and just sat at my table like a lump.
Well, you did fabulous. You were certainly inspirational to me with the speaking and the stories that you told, and especially your opening. You started talking about how far we have come as an LGBT community. And one of the things that you said really resonated with me is that transgender people used to have to get a license to wear a dress. Is that a real thing?
It's a real thing. The word transgender didn't even apply at that time. It was for drag queens, entertainers. Where I lived, and in many major metropolitan cities, in order to not break the law, because being in drag was considered concealing your identity, you had to wear three articles of man's clothing in some areas. They had lots of really bizarre rules like that. And another one of them was so that you would not be confused or could not be accused of being a prostitute or some other kind of criminal. You had to go downtown in Detroit and register for an entertainer's license so that you could be out and about in drag at the time. So if you had a booking at one club here and another club across town, you had a reason to be in the car dressed that way.
That's ridiculous. Just to be yourself and just dress the way that you want to dress, which everyone should have the freedom to do. That's outrageous.
And the reason I started with that kind of story is because look at the people that they were honoring. Some of them new to the struggle for equality, and some of them who have been at the forefront of that struggle for equality, even right here in Colorado, since the 60s. And just trying to put that into context, and both last year when I co-hosted with Don Champion from Channel 7, and this year with Chris Parente from Fox, Nick asked us to talk at the beginning about what power meant to us and what the power party was really, how it affected us and how we tapped into it. And so that's the reason I told that very personal anecdote.
I have to say, you're a trailblazer. I was reading about you on the internet, and you are marked as the first mainstream transgender television journalist.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you? And do you think that's true?
I do think it's true in that there may have been other transgender men or women who were television journalists before me, but they weren't necessarily out. And even not being out, I don't know who that may or may not have been. I didn't realize it until someone else told me. When I started covering for Colorado Public Television politics, it didn't occur to me that no one else who was transgender had done it before, nor did it occur to me to keep it quiet. It wasn't, like, on my credentials.
Yeah, yeah.
but it wasn't a secret either,
yeah.
And it never occurred to me until later when there was some bad press about some of the interviews. Some of the politicians who sat down with me, they got some flack, not only for what they said, but for sitting down with the, quote, transsexual journalist, unquote. And I thought, I'm not really sure how that's relevant. And that's when I was told, the reason it's relevant is because you are the first.
Yeah. Was that when you were covering the 2008 convention?
Yep. During the Democratic National Convention, there were a few murmurs about, you know, oh. So I kind of heard that I might be doing something new. But I was so focused on getting the story and not being the story that I didn't really internalize that in any way. When it really became what you would call a negative issue was during the campaign for governor and senator in Colorado. Then Mayor John Hickenlooper was running for governor,
mm-hmm.
Against Tom Tancredo, among others. And he gave me an interview in which he made an inartful statement, and the conservative press was making hay with it, trying to win points against him, and then included the fact that he sat down with this transsexual. And Ken Buck, Republican candidate, even a Tea Party Republican at that, he had given me a couple of interviews, and he was really brilliant and wonderful and personable, and he was given a little flack for having given an interview to a transsexual journalist by the conservative press, and then that got used in the campaign against John Hickenlooper and Ken Buck, and I became sort of an issue for a moment, a white-hot moment. Didn't really hurt either of those candidates, but it did hurt me.
Well, thank you for taking on that role. I think that you serve as an inspiration for others who might want to follow in your footsteps and be in television.
I think it's other people that inspire me rather than me inspiring them. When I hear from young LGBT kids, students, teens, sometimes parents, when they contact me and ask me for advice, whether they want to be in television or not, or they just cite my work as evidence that they have so many more avenues than they thought, that's inspiring to me. I don't think of myself as doing any work that's inspiring anyone. I'm just doing my work. I'm just being a journalist.
True. Good way to look at it. And did you always know? I asked Chris this question too, because
yes,
you guys are both in the entertainment industry. And did you always know you wanted to get on to television? Was that a lifelong dream for you, or did you kind of stumble into it later in life?
For me, television as a journalist was sort of a second chapter.
Okay.
My early career in the entertainment field was in the theater and in dance and in New York, and I had a very different career. It was fairly successful at the time. The challenge for me is that I can't really cite any of those achievements, because then that raises a whole other set of questions about, oh, that's who you used to be, that's who you really are, that kind of thing. That's something that happens to transgender people that doesn't necessarily happen to gay and lesbian people. No one tries to undermine your current identity and cite it as something less than legitimate by referring to your previous identity as your real name or your real work.
I see.
So when I started to work on television, I had to almost start all over again. And I started doing it quite by accident, and then the convention came around, and the station was eager for people with experience to help cover, and I'd had a bit, and it was so exciting and so thrilling to just get in there and do the work. I never even thought about what I was getting myself into.
Yeah. Wow. What have you learned since you came out as transgender as a journalist, what piece of advice would you give to someone who might be aspiring to be a journalist, whether they're transgender or straight or in the LGBT community?
It's funny that you say came out as transgender, because I didn't come out in that. It was never a secret.
Okay.
But when it became an issue, when it became something that people focused on, that was a big surprise to me. I guess it was very naive. I just didn't think of it. The advice I would give is, if you want to be a journalist, make sure that you learn your craft. You learn the ethics of journalism. You really hone those skills, especially writing. Even if you're working on television, writing is important. Although the writing style can be very different. But the other thing is, what's exciting now is you don't have to wait for someone to give you permission to be a journalist. You don't have to wait for someone to give you permission to work on television.
About today's world.
Yep. To work on film, no matter who you are, because you can find equipment readily available, and you can just make it. Like we're doing today. And you can start publishing it. And even if you're in J school, you should still start publishing your own work, even if it's just for a tiny audience of your family, so you have that diverse experience of doing the work and getting it out there and getting the feedback from people who read it or watch it or listen to it. I would say just roll up your sleeves and do the work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you can start now with a blog that's free on WordPress or anything like that and take it from there. That's what I've done.
And everyone has a television studio in their hands, practically. The kind of video and audio you can produce with a smartphone is insanely better than the technology that existed at stations just a couple decades ago. So you can learn how to do that very cheaply, apps that help you control all of that and get it pushed out there in free platforms so that you gain the experience and you have a portfolio to add to your classwork, even if you're going to school as a journalist. Just do it. Just roll up your sleeves and give it a try and don't be afraid.
I wonder what this means for the future of TV and the entertainment industry. I talked a lot about this with different people, and I'm just wondering how the individual versus the studio are going to be able to either compete or collaborate, and you know where people are going to find their information 5 years from now in their entertainment.
Already you can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
If you look at two of the most critically successful and in terms of viewership, you know, commercially successful projects from this past year, both were independent productions, not even broadcast on television. They were streamed via Netflix, and that's House of Cards and Orange is the New Black.
Wow.
And I'm sure most of your listeners will have at least heard of both of those shows if they haven't seen them.
Yeah.
And those aren't not with the big three or the big four networks. They're not even on cable. It's a completely different way for creative people to generate work and get it out to the audience. That applies in entertainment, that applies in journalism, that applies in music.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to use my cable. I just moved into a new apartment and I still can't get my cable to work. Like, I saw Chris posted something the other day. I wanted to go see his show and I was like, I can't figure this out yet. So I love that there's so many different ways that people can find their information.
For our show, we're broadcast on a PBS station, which carries a lot of prestige. There's a lot of cachet for being on a PBS station. But the majority of our viewers don't necessarily watch us when we're live. They either watch us on a DVR, or even still, they watch us via their Roku box or their Apple TV or some other secondary screen device.
Yeah.
If you add those together, that number far exceeds the number of people who actually watch us when we're live on the air.
Nice. I was watching your last one on YouTube.
Yes, we pushed them out on YouTube also because even though that footprint is very small for us, there are some users who see us on YouTube that might not otherwise find out about us.
Yeah.
It's an important way to find new audience.
Got to be everywhere.
That's right.
I'm wondering, you've been doing this for a while, what has been your favorite interview or your favorite story or your favorite project that you've had? Or at least one of the top three.
Wow. That's always dangerous when you get into favorites.
Okay.
For me, quite literally, not just being coy, my favorite is always the one that I'm working on at the moment, because that's the one that you're in. That's the one that you've done your research. You're meeting the guest. But I would say some of the most notable would be Matt Stone and Trey Parker, of course, even on YouTube, which is a very small footprint for us. That has thousands of views on YouTube and people copying it and reposting it, which I don't necessarily encourage, but it is kind of flattering. The reason that was so important for me is they're from here. They're from here, and they just did exactly what we were talking about before. When they were in school, they started rolling up their sleeves and doing the work to create things. Their first film was a musical called Cannibal, and now look who they are. They have one of the most successful animated programs on cable and the most successful musical on Broadway and on tour and in the West End. And they're two guys who just rolled up their sleeves and did the work. And that was what was the most fascinating about doing that interview for me. And it was a longer format interview, so you get to get past that shtick that people who are interviewed frequently fall into because they're asked the same questions over and over again in their tight little sound bites. And so we got to get a little further, and they got to express themselves on their own terms instead of just the agenda of promoting the work. And I think that's one of the reasons it's one of the most notable interviews we did.
Nice.
And then George Hamilton. Do you know who George Hamilton is?
No.
George Hamilton is an actor from the golden age of Hollywood. He was very young at that time. But he exploited jokes about his own life and being the man with the tan and all that for his own good. He was in on the joke. And so when you see interviews with him, that's often the kind of interview he gives.
Right.
But because of the format of our interview and maybe some of the research I was able to do before we sat down, he was able to get truly emotional and just shed all of that and give me a very surprising interview, very heartfelt interview. We had one of those Barbara Walters moments, you know, with the tears streaming down.
I'm going to have to find that one and post it.
Yeah, it was really quite lovely because he talked about the impact of his own brother, who was gay, never being able to be truly himself, and what he asked him on his deathbed. And I won't spoil it since you said you're going to go look it up. But that's not the kind of thing you normally hear out of George Hamilton on a television interview. Those moments, no matter who I'm speaking with, those are the moments that always stick with me and make me feel like I've actually given my guest a chance to do something special.
Yeah.
When they're able to just stop worrying about the soundbite and just talk to me as the surrogate.
Yeah.
For the viewer.
How do you learn that skill? How do you bring that out in people? Did you ever have somebody that you looked up to in the industry that you kind of started to use their techniques at all? Or
I wouldn't presume to say that I copied these people's technique, but I will say that, you know, of course the icons, Barbara Walters, Oprah Winfrey, Diane Sawyer, but even someone like Tim Gunn, Marie Osmond, and that sounds like a diverse group.
Yeah.
What I think they might all have in common is they have preparation.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And we all know that. You have to prepare. You have to do your research. But they leave room for an intimate moment by actually listening rather than having just the agenda of what the piece is supposed to be. You leave space for the unexpected to reveal itself, and if you make the guest comfortable, they'll do that for you.
That's really great advice. I'm still learning. This is my...
You're doing great.
...passion project that I'm...
How did you start this project?
You know, this started when I first moved to Colorado. Actually, maybe about 6 months after I moved to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for something else on the side to make my life more fulfilling, a way that I could add value to the world. And I had been working for an author a couple of years ago who, you know, started with a blog and he had a book, and then he went off and he did his own thing. He started writing for Time and Forbes, and I was just really inspired by him, and he was kind of my mentor for a while. And I thought, okay, I want to see what success looks like in the LGBT community. I want to find experts, I want to learn best practices, and I want to show people that, yes, it does get better, and it's going to continue to get better for our community, whether you be gay, bisexual, transgender, lesbian, whoever you may be, it's going to get better for our community. But here are some people who are shining examples that have made it better for themselves and have moved things forward. And if they can do it, so can you. So that was really my inspiration for getting into the project. And I just found it to be very well received. And every time I write an article or attend an event or interview someone, I just feel like this is what I should be doing.
When you have that recognition, when you feel like this is what I should be doing, what does that realization mean for you in terms of the next step? How do you turn that into action?
That's what I'm determining right now. And I think that it's always a competition between what you were brought up to say you were going to be doing and how you're... life was sort of laid out for you and what your expectations were and then what the reality is. So I'm coming to terms with that and I'm figuring it out. And I'm just excited to be living in this present moment like you talked about earlier, like Chris talks about, like everybody talks about. Like, you got to live in the present moment. You can't be always thinking ahead or thinking behind, but like, what are you doing right here? So for now, I'm just enjoying the present moment and I will make my plans, but I'll figure it out later.
That's always the best. That's always the best, because you can surprise yourself by what you... if you leave yourself open to those kinds of possibilities. Of course, that means you still have to, you know, lay a foundation and do the work. But if you leave your heart open and possibilities open, there's so much exciting that can happen and that you can create. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And it's really... insane to me, the kind of people that you meet at these events, too. I've gone to the Start Out Awards. I've gone to the NGLCC conference. Tomorrow, I'm going to the first ever LGBT social media conference in Atlanta.
Can I come?
Yeah, please do. Please do. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, I've been looking at the speakers list. I've been tweeting them. And one of the guys leads the Freedom to Marry campaign, and I tweeted him. I was like, you know, can't wait to hear your closing keynote. We need to bring marriage in Colorado.
What's the hashtag for the event so we can all follow you?
Well, I don't know what the hashtag for the event is. I know...
well, soon as you find out, you post it in this. So
okay.
We can follow it.
The event itself is at Salon LGBTQ.
Uh-huh. At Salon LGBTQ.
Yeah, so I'll post that in the notes. That's got to get out tonight or tomorrow, probably while I'm at the airport. But...
yes, that's... you know, sometimes when you're stranded like that, that's the best time to edit.
Yep. Absolutely. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about your show, In Focus, with Eden Lane.
After the work that I was able to do for the station during the Democratic National Convention, and I was also serving as, I guess you could say, a co-host or a correspondent for the then longest-running LGBT news magazine in the country, even older than In the Life. It was called Colorado Outspoken. The people who created it had been running it for a very long time, and they were ready to let someone else try. And the station didn't want to see it go. They were very proud that they had kept that show on the air through Amendment 2, through all of the changes that have happened here in Colorado, and they really wanted that LGBT voice on their air. So I stepped in to help with that, and we kept it alive for one more year. But while I was doing that, the station, the programming director, gave me the opportunity to develop my own platform because we were achieving some success. And while I agreed to do some political interviews, and that was a series of specials called Eden Meets West, I also felt like, you know, there really wasn't anything that delved deeply into the local arts scene the way I would like to have seen it as a viewer. In terms of, you know, of course interviewing some celebrities, but interviewing artists who aren't quite as celebrated yet,
yes,
but should be.
The up-and-comers.
That's right. Or maybe they will be, maybe they never will be, because they're not doing that kind of work that will get them out there.
Right.
But we still should celebrate them because the arts is such an integral part of any community. And here in Colorado, it's the fifth largest employment cluster. So there's an economic impact here. So I wanted to feature that community in a new way. So we developed this program, and the station really liked it. The idea was that it was going to be just me introducing segments that other people generated, and maybe occasionally doing a segment. It just never turned out that way, because to feed that machine of television, a 27-minute, 30-second show every week in prime time, you have to generate content in a timely manner, in a dependable manner. So I just ended up doing it more myself than I ever expected to do.
Yeah.
But now in our sixth season, we're returning to broadcast in November. I have to say, it's the best work I've ever done in my life. Not because of the quality of the work, although I do think the quality of the work is unique, but it's the best work because, like you said, when you were beginning this project, it doesn't just feed the viewers and serve our viewers and serve the artists who come on the show, but this is really feeding my soul. I couldn't continue to do this work struggling financially the way it has been since all of the attention on my background without it feeding my soul as well as it feeds the soul of the artists and the viewers who really need to know, who have a hunger to know what's happening in the creative community. I'm one of those people. I'm a fan of everyone that we interview. I'm a fan of our viewers. I'm a fan of the people we haven't yet interviewed that we're waiting to highlight, because that work is so important in creating the culture that we have here in Colorado. So that's what that show is, and that's why even when people try to turn it into something other than, you know, do you want it to be an Entertainment Tonight kind of thing? Do you want me to do reviews? We resist that because it's a unique place to let those artists shine on their own terms, regardless of where they're at in their career yet. But it's also a chance to give viewers a new taste that they can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, that's so important to provide people with a platform and a voice. And it's just something that is great to watch, too, something to learn from, whether you be a viewer in Colorado or a viewer on YouTube or any of the other channels.
Oh, yes, on our streaming delivery, we have a large viewership in Europe and in Japan and all over the United States, so it's not just Colorado. And sometimes when I remember that, it gets a little overwhelming. Like, wow, I get letters from Sweden. I get letters from Germany. And we're very popular in India.
Wow. Yeah, I think I have a lot of people who download my podcast from Malaysia.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how they find it. I'm trying to dig in there a little bit.
It's that SEO you're doing with your podcast.
Yeah, I think so. So in all of your experiences, is there anything that you might do over in your career?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Anybody who said, you mean do it over, like to enjoy it all over again, or do it over to do it differently?
Do it differently.
Both, actually.
Yeah.
Of course there is.
Okay.
Now, even back to the point of you even wanting to talk to me was that, you know, that whole first transgender mainstream journalist on television. Well, you know, I would do that.
And I hope I didn't offend you with that comment. Okay.
No.
Or anything I've said.
No, never. When you're coming from an obviously genuine place that you seem to be, that there can be no offense because, you know, there would be no intent. It's about the intent. And, you know, calling me that name that I've been, has been attached to me and my work, that doesn't offend me at all. What it does is heighten my sense of responsibility that I have to do good work, and I can't give up no matter how many challenges come out of the fact that people noticed, oh wait, she's not just an arts journalist or a political journalist, she's a transsexual, she's transgender. So, you know, what does that mean? That's a huge responsibility. And I would have approached that differently to begin with. I think I would have wrapped my arms around that and embraced it early, rather than trying to distance myself from it, because that was a losing proposition. There's no way to distance yourself from it. I just didn't feel like I was good enough to be the first transgender anything. But I guess you don't really have to be good enough. You just have to be willing to try it.
I love that. That's awesome. Wow. What is one piece of advice you could give to anyone in our community, all inclusive, who wants to push themselves and, to your point, try?
Yeah.
Maybe they won't be the best, maybe they will, but if they want to take themselves to the next level and they want to try and do their best, what might you say to them?
I would say, if you're hesitant to try, whether it's to be an actor or to be a journalist or to be a writer or to be an office manager or to be, you know, head of sales or whatever it is your goal is, if you're hesitant to try, I guess the first thing you have to do is examine why you feel hesitant. Where is that apprehension coming from? What is it that you're afraid of? And if the worst thing that you're afraid of were to come true, what does that really mean? Because if you put that in perspective, if you recognize it and take it apart, it really isn't all that daunting to just try. You know, especially when you're talking about transgender women and transgender women of color, but all LGBT people, and really in our current climate, all young people, there can be so many dangers that can discourage you from reaching out. And if you examine it and take it apart, except for your personal safety, I mean, when your safety is in question, then you need to reexamine it. But if it's afraid of being embarrassed, if it's afraid of failing, you know, everybody who has succeeded or you see as success, their failures are the most important lessons that help them get to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
When I interview successful people, it's always their failures that were the most valuable parts of their success, their creative process, their achievements, all built on many, many, many failures. So if you realize that when you look at people you admire, your failures only mean that you can get that much closer to the goal that you set for yourself if you just stop being afraid, or maybe not stop being afraid, but just examine why you're afraid and try it.
Yeah.
Just try it.
Yeah. And that's all internal. That's something that we can control as individuals. We can always control what actions we take, and we can try.
How you react. There's this wonderful quote that I have in my room. I'll send it to you. It's not about the things that happen to me or the things that happen around me, or it's how I react to them. And it's the same with, you know, reaching out to try things. It's the same with failure. It's not that you failed, it's how you react to that and what you do next. And you're right, it's the only thing you can control is how you feel and how you react and the actions you choose to take. Because someone will always think that your show is awful. Someone will always think that your painting is bizarre. Someone always will think that your book is boring. Someone always will think that you could have, you know, made more sales, and whatever your career is. But the only part that you have ownership of and control of is how you cope with how you feel about what you've done and what you want to try.
Wow. Well, thank you for trying the show. Thank you for hosting the Power Party. Thank you for being with me here today. Like, it means a lot to me, and I've really enjoyed this time with you.
So have I. And now that they're all going to leave us, I can't wait for us to make arrangements to have coffee again.
Yes. And finally, where can people find you online?
Oh.
If they want to.
Well,
as
you did,
if they
just Google my name. But the show is at infocustv.org. So even if you don't live in this area, or you do and you want to look at past episodes, they're all hosted there online on iTunes, on Apple TV. And, of course, on Colorado Public Television on Friday nights at 7 p.m.
Yes. Nice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.